This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Welcome to Believe in Rams, part of the Believe Network. Aaron Coscarelli back with you. Be sure to, you know the drill, subscribe, comment, rate, and follow this podcast. You can also catch us on Believe TV, read the top Believe stories at SI.com, and of course, follow us on all the socials. All right, I am super excited to have two-time Super Bowl champion, former NFL wideout friend, and I think he's also Italian. Danny Amendola is going to join us. And his story is so inspiring. It's super motivating. If you don't know about him, I'm sure most of you do, but he was undrafted. He was undrafted, taken by two teams to join the practice squad until the Rams, the St. Louis Rams, decided to give him a shot. And that is where his career really started. So we're going to get into that story. We're going to get into how his mindset was during that time. You know, we're going to see a lot of guys who don't get drafted this draft season, but they may make a splash and make the practice squad and then get on a roster and carve out a career like Danny Amendola. Danny's had quite the successful career in the NFL. And I'm going to ask him all about that. I'm going to talk to him too about coaching, right? He was with the Raiders last season as on the coaching staff. So he's a great person right now to be totally dialed in, finger on the pulse when it comes to what these players are wanting out of their coaches. I may ask him about Belichick. We'll see. And of course, why is Sean McVay such a talented coach and motivator and evaluator? So we're going to ask him all of those questions and more. Stick around. I cannot wait to have Danny join the show. All right. It is time to catch up with former NFL wideout, two-time Super Bowl champion, Danny Amendola. What's up, D? How you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you, Aaron? Good to see you.
I'm good. I'm so good. Thank you for making time today because you're a busy man. You're currently in Detroit, but it's also draft week.
Yep.
And you also were recently at the 8 a.m. Invitational hosted by Justin Timberlake. Are you a pretty decent golfer? Like, where would you land with your golf skills?
I have some skills. I'm not consistent, which, I mean, is the hardest thing in golf is to be consistent. I'll get on the green in like two, say it's a par four or five. I'll be on the green in two or three, and then I'll three putt that thing. And then I'll be behind all day. But I mean, I have fun. I don't really put too much pressure on myself. Especially when you're out there with a bunch of, we had a bunch of great athletes out there. Michael Phelps, CeCe Sabathia, these guys are awesome at golf too. And just kind of watching them, seeing how they function on the course. I'm from Texas. I really don't play much golf. I like to surf and ride my bike, but golf really isn't my thing. I play like, I play like three or four times a year. So okay. It was fun to get out there and meet some new friends and see some old people. So it was fun.
Yeah. Get in the mix there with other athletes too. That's interesting. Phelps and all those guys. Well, who would you say has the best golf game since maybe you're taking yourself out of the mix between Edelman, Gronk and Brady?
Brady for sure. Julian sucks. He just got some. He just got some golf. He just got some TaylorMade golf clubs, and he thinks it's gonna save his game. But I told him those golf clubs aren't gonna save anything for him. He's terrible. And then Gronk, I'm sure can hit the ball a long way, but also struggles with consistency. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. Tom, obviously, we've seen Tom play on TV and in these little matches. He's unbelievable. I feel like all these, if you're a quarterback or a kicker or a punter in the league, like you got to be good at golf. It's something about those positions where, you know, you have to excel. Everybody else are just kind of meatheads, and we're losing golf balls left and right. So, yeah.
But I can only imagine. Does that drive Brady crazy? You guys like not taking the game serious, and he's like, I'm focusing here right now. Come on, you guys.
We've played a couple times. Yeah, we've played a couple times out in Yellowstone, and he really is unbelievable. Usually, we're just kind of clowning around, having fun. But when he turns it on, everybody knows how competitive he is. He's next level. So, he's the best. Me and Jules and Gronk will tend to screw around a bit and you know, throw a club or two. But it's good to get out there every once in a while.
Yeah, mix it up. It's fun. Well, speaking of next level, I would say switching gears from golf to football, you would be considered, in my eyes, a next level football player. But your story is so interesting, Danny. I don't know how many people actually know it because, you know, you came into the league undrafted. It's draft week. So one of the things when I think about you is your ability to be so resilient and gritty, right? So you were undrafted, and let me get this correctly. You did time on the practice squad with both the Cowboys and the Eagles before getting signed by the Rams, who were in St. Louis at the time. What was that experience like for you? Because, you know, you had to believe in yourself when in such a competitive world of football, when other coaches may not have at the time. And obviously look at your career now. Was there ever a point for you, Danny, where you were like, maybe I need to give up. Like no one's going to choose me until you went to the Rams, obviously.
Yeah. You know, I went to the combine coming out of college, and, you know, I didn't test well. You know, I don't look great getting off the bus. Like, I'm usually the shortest kid. I think in my Blisto report, they said I look more like a kicker than a receiver, which gave me some fuel. I mean, I seen guys before me do it, like Wes Welker, Wayne Corbett, you know, guys that have excelled at the level. And you know, did a lot of great things for our position. I knew I was comparable to those players. I just needed an opportunity. You know, not testing well at the combine hurt my draft stock. Went undrafted. Went to Dallas on practice squad. And truthfully, I thought that was really going to be my last year of football. Like, you know, you're on practice squad. You're not getting any playing time on Sunday, and you know, you're the last man on the roster. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't ready to play my rookie year. I just wasn't that good, and I didn't understand the ways of the NFL. I struggled getting the playbook. You know, my body wasn't mature, and you know, it was definitely an uphill battle. I got to Philly in my second year, still on practice squad. I could kind of relate what I learned in Dallas in the playbook and try to grow and learn really how to be a pro in Philly and learn from a whole new set of guys, whole new set of coaches. And that's really where I knew I had a chance, and given that opportunity, I was going to be able to run with it. I got picked up second week of my second season in St. Louis off the Philly practice squad. I had an amazing opportunity to return kicks for my, you know, that first game I was in. Turned out our starting X receiver broke his leg, so that there was my opportunity right there. The rest is history, really. I mean, it's just a matter of getting that shot and running with it. I tell guys all the time that are coming into the league, man, all you, it doesn't matter if you get drafted. you know, as long as you get a shot at camp, you're going to have a chance to show your ability to these coaches. Yeah, for me, it was a little bit of an uphill battle my first year. You know, I was behind guys like, you know, Terrell Owens, Miles Austin. These guys were putting up big numbers, and it was a great opportunity for me to learn. But at the same time, it fueled me throughout the rest of my career being undrafted. I had that chip on my shoulder. And you know, that really, that's something that stuck with me throughout my career. So,
yeah. But I relate to that too. There's something about sort of being underestimated that charges me. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to do this. All right, let's go. There's, maybe I need to go to therapy for that, but there's something about when someone in my career, or even when I was an athlete growing up, there's something to it where like, the chip helps motivate you, right?
No doubt. I'm a firm believer in that the only thing that's going to save you at the end of the day is the chip that you put on your shoulder, honestly. You know, that's the same thing that's going to get you up in the morning, going to light that fire up under your ass and get you moving and propel your career, essentially. So that's something that I carried with me throughout the 14 years I was in the league.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great mindset too. And I think it's great. Your story is such a compelling story, right? Because undrafted, two-time Super Bowl champ, and never really quit on yourself is such a good message to send to guys. And, you know, look, you spent some time as a coach. I've asked you this before too. You know, you were with the Raiders last season.
Yep.
And I think for me, you know, my goal as a broadcaster, and by the way, I don't even love saying that word broadcaster because I feel at this point I just want to be a conversationalist.
Right.
But my goal is to extract you like trust. Like I want people to feel comfortable and trusting. And,
right.
You know, for me, my question for you is, and the question I've asked you this before, is what in your opinion makes a great coach?
That's a good question. I've played for coaches that you know that are just happy to be there. I've played for coaches that try to instill fear, kind of scare tactics to get you to play well. I had a different experience as a coach because half of the players that I was coaching were my teammates at one point. And so they already knew me. They knew what I was about. They saw me go to work every day, and even though I wasn't able to put the helmet on, I was able to relate to them. And that was really my biggest goal as a coach is try to relate to them and say, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to support your family. This is a great opportunity for you to follow your dreams and play in the league and be everything you wanted to be as a kid. And you know, if you squander this opportunity, or if you you don't put your best foot forward, you're gonna regret that for, you know, the rest of your life. So it's like, you know, you show up to work and you know, you just give yourself the best chance to be successful and to put the best product on the field, sacrifice, you know, maybe hanging out with your friends late at night, going out to parties on Friday night when you know you should be resting for the game and just giving yourself the best opportunities to be successful. You know, it was great for me as a coach to get with this younger generation of rookies and work alongside the younger players. And you know, it was one, they made me feel old every single day because they would always talk about how they would watch us growing up. But I was just like a year removed from the league too. So, I love working with the younger players. I love working with guys that are eager and hungry and ask the right questions, and show up to work ready to go each day. You know, Trey Tucker is a guy who is is a young player but has all the intangibles to be a great one in the league. He's fast as lightning. He can catch. He asks the right questions, and just being around guys like that every day was hugely beneficial for me and made my job fun. So that's what I loved about it.
And you're so, you know, what's interesting too, it's like almost like the perfect person to ask this question to, because you're so dialed in. You just took the helmet off. You're, like you said, so newly or freshly out of the league, but then also you had this very interesting transition to get into the coaching world on a team that got really fired up behind another player's, like a coach that was a former player in Antonio Pierce.
Yeah.
In your opinion, I love that I have you on because I want to ask you this. Like, do you see that there's like a changing of the guards in terms of the way guys want to be coached right now?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I've been familiar with different tactics of coaching, whether it be, you know, you drop a ball, you're going to get cut, or, mm-hmm. you know, you don't perform, you know, you're too lax walking in the building, you know, you're going to get cut. And there's definitely a happy medium that goes alongside being a player's coach and being like a disciplinarian. I think mm-hmm. I think you gotta be personable with your players. I think there's a way to get your point across and not be, for lack of a better term, an ass. Like I played for a lot of coaches that want to yell and scream and like, listen, like if you can get your guy to play, you get your guys to play hard for you, get your guys to obviously know the playbook, but like really study the game, study what it takes to be a professional, then your job is done. I mean, we're talking about professional NFL athletes, guys that, you know, have been in the league for 6-7 years, they don't necessarily need like a coach, you know, on their tail every day, all day long, rather than somebody that's going to support and have their back. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I think that's what Antonio Pierce does. And he, you know, he played in the league for a long time, been on some really good teams, played for Coughlin, who is definitely like a scare tactic type of coach, whereas he's not like that. You know what I'm saying? He understands, hey, we're going to get our work in, work done each day. We're not going to drag practice out and wear you out and tire you out for the game each week. I really feel that the guys out in Vegas, you know, really absorb his style of coaching. I mean, it's directly relatable to the type of player he was and the type of organization that he's building.
Yeah. And it's a lead by example kind of environment. Right. You know, it's so interesting. Like when I was in high school and I was first starting my, you know, working career, I had two totally different types of bosses. I had one boss. He was my first boss. So I might have been maybe, I don't know, 16. And the guy was like breathing down my neck. It was super intense to be in what felt like a very intimidating environment. In fact, actually, I made a lot of mistakes because of this like sort of heavy energy. Right. And then I had a completely different boss who was like a dentist, you know, and he was like, so nice. And I wanted to show up early and stay late and help out. Right. And so I think when you discuss the elements or the components of a good leader, yeah, I think you're right. There's a balance, right? There's like we've come here to do work, but also, you know, I want to hear how you're feeling. I want to make sure you're feeling comfortable, but I'm not a head coach, so I don't know how it works, but I imagine it might be similar, just making people feel good.
No doubt. I mean, we all understand they have a business to run, and we all, I mean, at the end of the day, as long as your lifestyle is predicated around winning football games, then it's going to be successful no matter what. I mean, or at least you will be as a player, I think. You know, it takes a couple years for these guys to understand, like as a rookie, second year guy, you know, they can be developed their first 2 years. They can have an off season under their belt. They could go into their third year, have a routine, and then kind of build from there. And once you get really into like your sixth year, it's like, listen, give me the playbook. I'll take care of from here. And that's what I loved about my coaches is if they have that trust in you, and you know, it's not necessarily like a middle school run organization. So
Right. You know, I want to be respectful of your time, but a coach you did play for a little bit, a couple of seasons, was a guy by the name of Bill Belichick, who has a unique style of leading. When it came to a lot of the owners kind of passing on him, were you surprised by that?
I was actually, you know, obviously he's a great football coach. I love the drills we did in practice. I love, you know, ball security drills, the tackling drills, the extra running and the hill and like all this mm-hmm. stuff we did, because it genuinely made me a better player. You know, so when it comes down to X's and O's, he was one of the best coaches I ever played for, without a doubt. Obviously, we had a pretty good quarterback, so that made my life a lot easier too. So, you know, it goes hand in hand. You know, I was surprised when, you know, I don't know the extent of how his interviews went or what he wanted to do or what kind of position that he wanted to be in. I know he's a guy that, you know, loves power and loves mm-hmm. being in charge of everything. So I don't know if that wasn't the right role for him at those given organizations. You know, I know he's a good coach. I know that. And then we've heard other stories about the type of person he is, but I'll save that for another day.
Sure, sure. That's a whole nother conversation for another day. But you did play with him for 5 seasons. So obviously, and you know, you guys had your own Super Bowl rings you got from playing with Bill. Do you see him being a head coach in the league again? Or
I mean, that's a good question. You know, obviously he has the experience. He's probably, I mean, he is. I mean, he's the most decorated active coach of the league. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he has a reputation, I think. I mean, I guess, you know, I know he's doing some media stuff now. I don't know what his intentions are, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in the league again here in the next mm-hmm. year or two. So yeah. We'll see how it goes for him.
Yeah.
I know he's chasing those wins. He's got to be on the top of the mountain in those wins.
He's right behind Don Shula. I can't remember how many wins it is, right? But exactly. And, you know, really quickly too, this is a Rams show. I want to get your take on why Sean McVay, in your opinion, what is it about him as a head coach that translates so well to the players to execute wins and even evaluate talent, him and Les Snead, on draft day? They do so well even when they haven't had a first round pick in such a long time.
No, yeah, and first of all, the Rams hold a very special place in my heart. I was in St. Mm-hmm. Louis with them, and I was ready to move to LA back in the day. I was like, mm-hmm. let's pack up the buses. I would wear these old LA Rams shirts around the building. I'm like, let's go to LA. I was training in LA. I had a house in LA, and I was ready to go. I love Les. Les gave me a great opportunity as a young player, and Sean is a great coach. I've known Sean for a number of years. He's a good friend of mine. We try to link up whenever we're in the same city, and he's an unbelievable coach. His overall wherewithal of football, NFL football knowledge is unbelievable. He's like a walking dictionary in terms of his – how we can remember a certain play that happened in the third quarter of the a Redskins game back in like 2009. And it's like, dude, it's like he's a savant, unbelievable, unbelievable football IQ, unbelievable character. You can tell in his interviews, you can tell in his players and how they speak about him and how much they love him. You know, and I've never got to play for him, but just chopping it up with him, you know, really as much as we can, he's an unbelievable person, and I can't say enough about the type of player or the type of coach and the type of person that he is. But you know, I think they, you know, Les does a great job on draft day. They always seem to get the pieces to the puzzle that they need, and you know, they've been in the game for a long time. Obviously, they have a great quarterback with Matthew and some great skill position players with Cooper and Puka, and the tight ends are great, the backs are great, the O-line's good. You know, the defense is solid. We got a chance when I was in Las Vegas last year. We got a chance to practice against them in LA for a couple days, and I got to see firsthand really what their team, what their coaching style, what their atmosphere was all about. And I was highly impressed.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, compensate for the void of not having Aaron Donald this season. But the draft, they're going to get the first round for the first time since 2016. So it'll be interesting what they do decide. It is draft week. We have Danny Amendola on the show. I know you're in Detroit. I'm going to let you go. But, you know, your story is super inspiring. And I hope you tell that story more often, because it really resonates for people who, you know, feel like they are being underestimated or undervalued, whether it's on the football field or, you know, in a board meeting. So thank you for taking the time to jump on, Danny, and have the best time in Detroit.
Thank you. I will. We got some draft festivities tonight. I know this. I got off the plane and I mean, there's fans everywhere. They're setting up tents everywhere. The city is electric. I know I lived here. I played for the Lions for 2 years, and I haven't seen the downtown area so juiced up like this. So I know I know there's a lot of football fans in Detroit ready to go for the draft. I know the Rams will be ready to take their defensive tackle, whoever that may be.
Yeah, but
I'm looking forward to it and the start of another good season. So thank you for having me. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's great to see you. Great to chop it up. Huge fan of your show and all the work, and good luck.
Thanks, Danny. All right. Stay warm. I know it's cold in Detroit. It's what, 40 degrees, right?
I got off the plane in a wife beater and I was freezing. Yeah, it's 30. It's like 42 right now. It's supposed to get down to 35 tonight. So we'll see.
All right. Well, stay warm, have fun, and I will talk to you soon. And that'll do it for us here on Believe in Rams. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Draft week, it is like my favorite time of the season to see how these GMs and coaches band together and put together pieces on the roster. It'll be so interesting to see how it all plays out. Guys, thank you again for joining us. I'm Erin Coscarelli, and I will see you next time.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.